see, baby, it's a passion. It is a passion that I cannot explain. I will not try to explain. It can never be explained. In fact, it is more than a passion. It is a driving force that I can never possibly subvert. I can never possibly turn aside. Like, baby, I've got to go. I've just got to go. The yellow pages, the ancient dreams. The olden summits that we climbed. The grapes that we plucked. Oh, yes. Yes, and the eternal songs that we sang, you and I together. Oh, this is a long, long, straight arrow. And it pierces into the heart of nothingness itself. Cling to the hanging straps, baby. Swing, cling, and hope that thou wilt not be swallowed by the vast, eternal, all-engulfing, devouring void. Like I've got to go. Go, do you understand? No, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. You see, I tried to tell the story over again. And halfway through, I knew it wasn't coming off. I knew no one was listening. Because it wasn't the same. It will never, ever be the same again. So stop dreaming. It won't be. It won't. It can't be. I'm me and you're you. And you aren't the same. The time isn't the same. The wind has changed. The very texture of the sand itself has transposed itself into some unnameable substance. So please don't bug me, you know? Like, I mean, I've got to go. You sit on the edge of the chair all of your life until the mohair is scratching at your duff like you think you can't stand it. But you will. You can. You always can. And you sit on the edge of this chair of life waiting for someone to say something that's going to make the party start all over again, you know? When there was a kind of vibe, kind of life, a sort of expectancy, I guess is the word, as though any minute now you were going to have a taste that you couldn't possibly ever forget. It was the expectancy. And so I'm telling this story, and I knew it wasn't going over. It wasn't. It's like, you know, baby, it's like when you're standing on the street and there are two or three guys around and they're all talking, and suddenly they all start listening to you. They've stopped interrupting each other and they're listening to what you have to say. Hold it. Watch it. You got to watch. It's like you're standing on a street corner, you know, and they're all suddenly listening to you. And they haven't listened to you before. They've been doing nothing but interrupting. I guess the first thing that surprises people, baby, when they get a tape recorder and they turn it on in the living room and they say, let's just leave the tape recorder going and we'll have fun. And George and Fred and Ruthie and all of them will be talking, and later on we'll play it back and it'll be so great to listen to it. And the first thing you notice when you listen to a tape recording like that is that no one listens to anybody else and everyone interrupts everybody all the time. And you can really hear it on the tape. Well, it's the way you live. It's nothing but one big interruption. And then suddenly, for no reason, an unaccountable reason perhaps, but no reason at all, because no one can account for it or write it on a blackboard or put it in a book, all the guys are listening to you. And you're talking away there, and everybody has stopped, and they're listening. And so you're saying, well, then, I'll tell you what, Hal, a very funny thing, see? I was driving along this road. It was in West Virginia. I was on my way to Wheeling. Now, the roads are real curvy on the way to Wheeling, and the hills are steep, and you're aware that they're listening to you. No one's ever really listened to you. And I'm coming down this long grade, see, and there was a semi ahead of me. Funny thing, big semi. And I sensed something. It was coming out of the bushes there, and there's a big thing, and I noticed all of a sudden there was a bear running down the middle of the road in front of me. Have you ever had a bear running down? And this semi made a left turn and went off the road, and there I was all alone with a bear. And they're all listening to you, and your voice gets louder and louder. The story gets more ridiculous and more ridiculous as you tell it, and you suddenly are aware that it has no point at all. And you begin to pad, trying to make it look like it has a point. Well, you know, I got into Wheeling at 3 o'clock in the morning, and let me tell you, Wheeling, oh, wow, what hotels. So I go first to this one place called the Statler Wheeling, I think it was something like that. And then they were all, they have a big pots and pan salesman convention. Wheeling, oh, my. And I drove across the bridge there at the Ohio River. Nobody's listening, and yet they're all listening. The thing to remember is that you're never going to go back. Don't think for one instant I'm going to be like I was on the all-night show in 1956. I'm not, because you aren't either. Nobody is the same. The night isn't the same. The world isn't the same. The air isn't the same. Venus isn't the same. And I should be the same? Oh, no. Oh, no, Daddy. I've grubbled along the bottom of many a silt-laden stream since those days. I've entered many a contest, clipped many a coupon guaranteed to bring me the magic booklet that will ensure me eternal happiness. It's like the other day. I'm standing around, first on one foot and then on the other. I'm waiting in the ante room of a publisher's. You know, you can tell a great deal about what's going on in the world if you listen carefully to the receptionists. Those people who live in that wonderful purgatorium of the 20th century, the waiting room. Oh, isn't that a sinister name, the waiting room? Waiting. It's like this one time I'm standing on, I think it was Broadway. I'm waiting for a bus. It's downtown someplace. And it's one of those neighborhoods, you know, where all the old warehouses are being knocked down and stores are going out of business and guys are selling used army field jackets and stuff like that. And right there by the bus stop was an old deserted barber shop. I never would have thought that people deserted barber shops. There must have been a time when everybody ran out of it like the rats deserting a sinking ship. The last barber left with his last pair of scissors and says, I'm closing up forever, Al. And there it was. It was dirty, you know, and you could see those old Kreml cards in the windows there and Lucky Tiger signs looking out, but there wasn't a soul there, and there was that red and white totem pole out in front. The blood. The blood of the totem. Out there with that big white glass bulb hanging over it, and some kid had written something on it, but this was way downtown. And I'm standing there, and there in little gold letters, inscribed near the lower left-hand corner of that old deserted blackened window with the two big white crosses, you know, that transgressed right across that flat surface, there was this gold decal sign. And all it said was, you're next. Well, I got in the bus, and I headed uptown. And that was echoing in my head, you're next. You're next. And that old Lucky Tiger sign with its green eyes peered out at me. And I began to observe that in these silences, in these dust-laden corners, even in the far reaches of the outfield out there by the monument, there is a gold decal hanging in the air someplace, and we all know it, that says, you're next. Like this one time I'm over here. You never know when you're going to see the truth. I'm over here on 36th Street. Maybe 35th, 38th, one of those streets that cut across and head towards both rivers, hopelessly trying to straddle both possible worlds, reaching for the east side and yet Not giving up at all on the west side and just hanging there. Like a catfish trying to pretend he's a game fish in a world of smallmouth bass. And I'm walking along, going sideways down this street. And I come across an old, deserted, dilapidated shoe repair shop. By the way, that's where men have a very special view of life. Oh, yes. You should see the bottom of Marilyn Monroe's shoes. You'd be surprised. The same earth that you trod. Yes, they all look alike, all lined up there with their heels turned over sideways. All of them look alike. And these little short men who seem to be cursing even when they're silent. These little short men sort of graying. I've never seen really a young shoe repair man in these places. They're old even when they're young because they see all those rounded heels, all those worn-out soles, and you can spell it any way you care to. Yes. Some of them are plastic, and some of them are the real thing, but they all wear in the middle. And you can spell it any way you care to. And I'm walking past this deserted shoe repair place. I never have been able to explain this sign yet. You ever looked in the window of old stores that are about to be knocked down on 6th Avenue where it says, "This building about to be demolished for the new 5,000-room Conrad Hilton 6th Avenue. Solid chrome and aluminum reaching to the sky is going to be occupied by solid chrome and aluminum people. Where are they coming from? I can tell you this, that guy who used to work that machine that ground the heels down is not going to be living in the Conrad Hilton 6th Avenue. Where did he go? He's gone. You're next." And so I'm walking along, and there is this old, about-to-be-destroyed shoe repair shop. And hanging all across it were these sad pieces of crepe. You know these crepe things that people used to hang in stores, like big crepe ribbons that hung across the ceiling? He had celebrated a Christmas many centuries ago, and it was kind of hanging down. Crepe paper has almost disappeared. You know the stretchy kind of paper? Yellow and green, but it had lost its redness and its yellowness and its greenness and was just kind of limply hanging. And dust and some old heels and a few pair of wedgies laying in there and places where you could see things were ripped off the walls. And there was a cat's paw heel sign there. Always there's a cat's paw. You could put any interpretation. You know what is it, a cat's paw? It's more than a heel, Daddy. It's been a long time since you've been around the pool room. You have been hanging around good company, haven't you? You have forgotten the symbols. Get back with it, will you? Come on, I'm not different. You are. Speaking of symbols, this is WOR AM and FM, New York. A symbol of honest, reliable friendship. Put your hand out. We love you. And there in the window was a half-obliterated sign. The kind of sign, you know, that loses its color in the sun and in the age of time and the slow, grinding morass of the eternal millstone. And I could just read the letters, and all it said was, "The Angel of the Week." Well, I mean, there are times when you don't turn back. There are times when you just hitch up your belt and say, "I am a game fish." Hey, do you know anything about game laws, Daddy? You know that there are two kinds of fish. They're what they call the coarse fish. And then there's the game fish. And then there's the pan fish. Which are you? I mean, if you were to have game laws for humanity, are you a game fish? Do you fight right down to the last? Are you a valuable game fish? Or are you just a pan fish, a fryer? Make a rather decent meal. Respected, but eaten. Or are you what they call a coarse fish? The kind that they sell by the pound to use for dog food later on. Just a passing thing. I mean, most things are just passing anyway, so I'm standing there in the waiting room of this publisher, and a tall man wearing a coat with a fur collar. I've always been impressed by people who wear coats with fur collars. A tall man with a fur-collared coat. Carrying a black attaché case. It takes a lot of guts to carry a black attaché case. Goes hurrying right through that swinging gate. This chick says, "Go right in, Mr. Gatsby, go right in." And he swept right in, and I'm waiting there for my call to come from whatever it is there in the other room, be it heaven or hell. And I'm just waiting there with my poor little papers, my poor little scheme that I'm attempting to foist on them, hoping against hope that they won't spot the shiftiness in my eye this time, waiting. And Mr. Gatsby swept right on through. I was impressed. 5 minutes later, I'm still sitting on my duff, thumbing through the National Geographic. Mr. Gatsby swept right on out again with the swinging door swishing behind him, into the elevator, and he was gone. I said to the girl, who was that? She says, he's one of our best-selling authors. I said, what does he write, fiction or what? What is he? Who is he? She says, that's Mr. Gatsby. Of course, we're not using his real name here. She says, that's Mr. Gatsby. And I'm thinking, Gatsby, the great Gatsby. What does he write? She says, he's one of our best sellers. He's a crisis man. I said, what? She says, oh, yes, it's a very big business. Our house is, we're the big crisis publisher, you know. And he's one of our leading writers. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he works in crisis, you know. I said, what do you mean? Does he write fiction where people run head-on into one another and are unable to solve the problem? What do you mean, crisis? I see what you mean. Well, he writes about the crisis in the Middle East, the crisis in Europe, the crisis in Russia, the crisis in our domestic policy, the crisis in U.S. diplomacy. Actually, he's one of our best-selling authors. People can't get enough of crises these days, you know. And he's very, very good at it. He's one of the best we have. He is a crisis man. And then she went back to painting her nails and picking her teeth. And I went back to hoping against hope that they wouldn't spot the shiftiness in the eye. Somehow I suspect it. Did I ever tell you about the time I'm 9 years old and another kid told me that it is possible to siphon gas? Is there anybody out there, anybody ever siphoned gas out there? Any of you? Oh, let me tell you about it. I never could figure out the principle of siphoning gas. It amazed me and amused me, and furthermore, it completely befuddled me. Do you know that the first time I tried it, I'm this kid, see, and another kid, about maybe sixth grade, something like that. And this kid says, look, how about going out with me tonight and siphon some gas for the old man? This was in the Depression, and it was considered fair game, you know, like stealing radishes out of radish patches. Siphoning gas was not really looked down upon in the best of circles. This meant siphoning gas. And I says, what do you mean? He says, you know, the old man wants some gas for his Essex. We're going to go off. Come on, let's go. And so I am out siphoning gas. Well, here's the way you do it, actually. You take this jar, and you take a long tube, a rubber tube, and you stick it down into the gas tank, and you suck real hard, see? And just when it starts to come up, you pour it over and into the jug. The next thing you know, the jug is filled. And then you flop it up like that, and the gas squirts out, and you run. Well, I'm a kid, you know. I'm 9 years. I can't figure out how come this gas keeps coming out after you stop sucking, you know? Little did I realize about Newton and all the rest of those converging lines of physics and the sign that was in one day to look me right smack in the eyeball and say, you're next. So I'm standing there and I take this big suck. I was an Ovaltine kid and I got 4 gallons of gas in my left lung all the way down. Have you ever tried about, say, 4 quarts of Esso Supreme right after supper? Oh, there was turnips and meatloaf and everything all over the street in 30 seconds. And I 15 minutes later, I'm home, see, and I'm sitting in the kitchen, and my mother says, have you been drinking? Just thought you ought to know, it isn't exactly what it looks like, Jack. listen, before we go any further, I must say that I am extremely pleased to be back on again at night. I can't tell you what a great feeling it is to be here. It's like being back in the army or something. Yes, I know all about that. Excuse me, madam, it's a throat problem I have. It's an old thing that's pursued me ever since. Oh, that's a long story. Oh, listen, you talk about siphoning gas. I'll tell you something about siphoning gas. I remember one time right in the middle of the Depression, Uncle Carl got so low once, and Aunt Min got so tough that he couldn't spend any of his dough on even near beer. And he got so that he used to sit on the back porch and just smell gasoline. Yeah, he just sit back there, and he has this funny look on his face, and Aunt Min would say, "Well, Carl's out in the back, he's sniffing gas." And my mother would say again, she says, "Well, it's Saturday, I don't mind, he doesn't have to get up early in the morning." And I'm a kid, see, and I'm going back there, and I'm standing around, there he is, his banjo is laying there unplayed, his shoelaces are untied, he's got this silly look on his face, and there's a ball jar half full of Phillips 66. That's what his vintage was, by the way. There were some guys who were S.O. men. He was a Phillips man. And he used to just sit there and sniff, and he'd get this silly grin on his face. And I'll never forget the time he says, "You're old enough to try it, son." I said, "Try what?" He says, "Well, here, sniff." And I sniffed. And ever since that time, every time I drive into a gas station now, I get that kind of silly grin. I like to smell that gas glugging down into that tank. The sound of a gas tank knocking off the gallons, I think, is probably the most typical anthem of our time. Boing, boing, boing. And it's the sound that all men have found themselves going down the drain to. The eternal nipping at the heels, the hounds of hell are biting at your duff, constantly driving you to scoot across the... Why? Where? I mean, who knows? Well, old Uncle Carl just sniffed and got that funny look. You know, speaking of that, and I must say that it is a good thing to be back again at this hour, and I'm quite sure that many of you, in fact, I know this is a fact, judging from people who have dropped notes and one thing and another, that many of you have been around ever since those terrible, devastating, calamitous Wanamaker days. I wonder how many Wanamaker veterans are here with us. That was a tiny band huddled up against a chicken wire fence back of the burned-out Wanamakers being herded back and forth by New York's finest on a steamy, mosquito-ridden, miserably hot August night many centuries ago. Do you realize, and I'm going to tell you a terrible thought, do you realize that if you had been a freshman in college at that day, that moment, and had continued to pursue whatever course you were studying, from that moment on, and we're still working on it now, you would be well into the work on a master's degree? Oh, that was another age, another era, another time, another temperament, and other mosquitoes. I wonder how many of the veterans who are around at this hour. I wonder how many of them are sitting there saying, "Shep's changed. Ain't the same. He's sold out." Dad, I'm sitting here doing the same thing, scratching the same floating rib, saying they ain't the same. Sold out, bunch of phonies out there who don't know a matzo ball from a creeping meatball. Not one of them. Yes, I think that all of us shall see the day when the headstones will be raised over each one of us, and they will be graven with that significant notation, "He was undone by knaves and fools." Knaves and fools. Speaking of knaves and fools, and this is the only time that the real stuff can find. You know, it's here it is. It's the hour. You know, it's the hour. It's all of the essence. Timing is more essential, really, than substance in so many things. A love affair can be ridiculous at the wrong time. At the right time, it is all. All. And even if the same ridiculous qualities cling to it, the same crummy bits of lost lichen, the same broken pop bottles of dreams, But it is the time, the time, the time. And there is never any repeating, you know, never. It can never possibly ever be the same. And who would want it to be? I mean, it's like if you could take some graph paper, you know, and you plot time against incident. And then you'd have to run what has to be a very infinitely complicated graph. Have you ever considered your life as an equation? An equation that is constantly unbalanced, you see. On one side is, you keep shifting these unknowns. Oh, the binomial theorem will not help here. It has to be some incalculable calculus that could somehow work out this problem, this formula of the life. All those strange exponents. And some of these substances and some of the unknowns are carried to powers that you couldn't possibly carry anything mathematically to powers. And there are strange square root signs, square roots of nothings, multiples of zeros, cube roots of negative ciphers. And this is your life. And there are equal signs and plus signs and negative signs that keep disappearing and changing their character. Always. They never remain the same. And so it shall be that I shall not be what I was in 1956 all night. Thank heavens. Nor shall you. I shall hope that all of us are 4 or 5 years older and wiser. And there is a little more wisdom coupled with our anger. Anger without wisdom is like just a flame burning in air, heating nothing. What was it that Shakespeare said? Our lives are poor players, strutting and fretting upon the stage, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. A tale told by an idiot. Stand back, jackanapes, stand back. There isn't a man jack among you who doesn't deserve a caning. caning. Thank Jove, when men were men, you'd have been horsewhipped to within an inch of your life. By George, I'd be the first to do it. While younger. That's better. That's better. There, you see, it feels better. Did you hear about this guy over in New Jersey? You hear about the guy in Jersey that led them a merry chase? I'd like to ask you a question now that might possibly be a leading one. Are you leading them a merry chase? There's really two kinds, you know. Either you're the dog running on the track chasing the electrical rabbit, or you are the rabbit. Who wants to volunteer to be the electrical rabbit tonight? There's no question about it that each one of us secretly, in his heart of hearts, wants somehow to be able to pursue someone and run him to the ground and finally defeat him. It's a terrible secret desire. How would you like to do a real public service? How would you like to volunteer to be the electrical rabbit for all of us and allow all of us to run you to the ground? Say, pursue you around Times Square for about 4 hours and finally corner you in one of those dark metallic doorways on the side streets, trapped among the old empty wine bottles and cigar butts. Tiger, tiger, burning bright. Why, for art thou so sad tonight? Tiger, tiger, burning bright, huh? Who wants to volunteer tonight, huh? Any volunteers out there? Hey, this is old Shep. I'm your friend. Come on, volunteer. Anybody? Put your hand up. How about out there in Staten Island? Is there anyone out there willing to pull in his stomach muscles and stand up and say, I volunteer, I'm it? Have you noticed how kids' games get right to the heart of it? That there's always somebody who's it in the game? It. Isn't that a significant phrase? It. Are you it? Have you ever had the feeling in the office, say about 11 o'clock, 20 minutes or so after the coffee break, that suddenly, somehow, in the air, there is the sensation, a kind of electric magnetism that says, "You're it, Charlie. You're it. You better dodge. If you're tagged, you're out." You're it. I-T. You know, adults don't use that phrase. Kids do, because kids know of death and destruction. Kids walk on sidewalks and step on caterpillars. They know what it means by being it. I-T. And of course, adults, as they grow older, always have this ridiculous, odd little desire to turn children into kindly creatures, which they never were. No such thing as a kind child. There are frightened children. There are weak-kneed kids, but never kind ones. Do you hear about that guy over in Jersey? Please, give me... Ed. Hey, by the way, Ed, it's good to be back with you. May I tell you this? I'm going to tell you right now. Give me the phone. Pick up the phone. It's good to be back with you, Ed. Why don't you say hello to him?
Hello.
That's Ed. Oh, George, Ed, I've worked with you so many years ago, I can't remember. It's good to be... Yes, Ed. A volunteer wants to hurl himself into the maws of the juggernaut? A girl volunteer? Gee, that makes it even more interesting. Oops. Well, this is a kind of an introductory night here, so you just have to get used to it. It's very good to be back. And there is a quality of, like, nobody's listening at night. That is, nobody who shouldn't be listening. All the salesmen are safely tucked in bed, or they're out waltzing with their expense accounts. And so we're safe, Daddy, all of us here, for this while anyway. And stretching out from this great city, and I'd like to say another thing, I'm in New York. Let me tell you, there's no place in this world I'd rather be right now than New York. I've been there, you know. Name it. I love this place. It's a terrible, terrible sickness. I admit to it. And I'm always pleased whenever I hear guys saying, "Boy, I'm telling you, I want to get out of this joint. I want to run away." I'm secretly saying, "Fine, good, go. That'll give me more room in the line at Hector's. Go." I'm staying. And then, of course, I start rumors like, "Do you know that there are 4,000 alligators sleeping in the reservoir right there in Central Park? I'm trying to chase them all out. See, I want it for myself. New York belongs to me, you know. I don't know whether any of you clowns know it, but this city you're walking around in, you're walking around because I'm letting you walk around in this city. It's mine. M-I-N-E, mine. I love it, and it's mine, Daddy." Oh, boy. And stretching out from this city like a great big... Like a spoke wheel of a bicycle, a 28-incher, with the thin tires. There are all these superhighways and all these roads, and on all these roads and superhighways, there are lost travelers scudding through the night. 20th century men like you and me, driven by some unmentionable flame to go flying over the landscape searching for something that they'll never find. "Hi, buddy, how's it out there on the Jersey Turnpike tonight?" And there's nothing I find more exciting, by the way, at certain moments, than whistling through the night on a turnpike. I love it, too. I'm just as restless, as gnawed as all the rest of them. I'm one of them. Don't think for a minute I don't enjoy seeing the lights of that Howard Johnson coming up ahead. More clams, baby. More clams. I'm bitten by the same bug. I have consumed over 5 million pounds of Howard Johnson brownies in the past 4 years. I'm made entirely of brownies that squish. Chock full of nuts on one end, Howard Johnson on the other, Needix in the middle. Right down the line. Yes, sirree, Bob. Now, if you will please regale me with some cheap guitar music, I will sing to you the epic of a man of our time. En quickly, exactement. Pleasissimo. I'm glad to have you with us. Hey, if any of you guys out there are on the highway, you know, this is a premiere program. We're back again tonight. This is the first time in many eons. If any of you are out there, look, wait, before we go, listen to this carefully. Before we go, we've only got 6 minutes left now. The time has fled before we've started. Six, but I'll be back tomorrow night, and the night after that, and the night after that, and I'll be here forever. Forever. Do you understand that? I've got a contract that says forever. And on the bottom of my contract, it says, and we guarantee, we, the trustees, operators, and officers of WOR, that Shepherd J.P. shall live happily forever after, along with all of his friends, neighbors, countrymen, and fellow sufferers on the nighttime beat. So we're all going to live happily ever after. Don't you feel better now? It came from the controller's office here. And you... Now, before we go, I want one of you poor clowns out on the turnpike at my signal to flash your light and to let some other poor clown who is advancing towards you or going away from you or who is behind you just flash your light up and down, quickly, and let him know that you too are one. You are also traveling the yellow brick road searching for the Emerald City, the eternal great Howard Johnson of them all. And by the way, some people's concept of paradise and heaven is that. But when they get there, it's the last great Howard Johnson with eternally clean restrooms. Never knew I could play the guitar, did you? All right, come on, flash those lights now. For nearly 2 full hours, Roland H. Corter must have thought he was the biggest thing on ice since Scotch. Corter, 20, of the Parkview Apartments, Collingswood, New Jersey, fancies himself as a figure skater. A fancy figure skater. He's no Dick Button. But for the better part of a chilly afternoon, he had the cops from 4 police departments scrambling around as if they were playing a game of button, button, who's got the button? Grab that son of a gun. Listen to this. This is a great story. Listen to this. I'm filing this away among my gigantic file of trivia so that 1,000 years from now when they dig up my file cabinets, they'll know what 20th century man was like. I salute this guy. Listen to him. I'd love to meet him. It all began when Corter decided that an artificial pond in Camden County Park was too confining. Listen, now don't let your attention wander. You got to hear this. He decided that the pond was too confining. He needed more room to skate. He found just the setting at a nearby lake with plenty of room to roam. And lo, no other skaters to interfere with his artistry. There was a reason for his privacy. Skating was forbidden there. Two park policemen, seeing Corter go out on the ice, hollered at him, "No skating on that lake!" Corter continued to perform his patterns. The officers rushed out on the ice to stop him. Carter dodged and danced beautifully. The skidding officers, who were not on skates, brought up the rear. After the crazy ballet lasted for several minutes, the park police called for help. First, an officer from Haddon Township arrived. Then two came from Collingswood. Then two more from Pensauken. In 15 minutes, there were 35 officers running around the rink, and he was skating beautifully between them. Up and down he went for over 2.5 hours, until hundreds of spectators lined the rink, all of them cheering Corter, of course. He did an entrechat. He did figure eights the hard way. Then he did figure fours and figure twos, first on one foot, then the other. There were 75 police before it was over, and over 500 people cheering him. Finally, the cops, who kept sliding around like an act of circus seals, closed in. They formed big circles around him, closing in, then little ones, and finally he leaped high in the air in a beautiful final leap to land in the arms of 7 police officers. They took Corter from the ice to the cooler in Pensauken, where he was charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and skating in a prohibited area. He also got a contract to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show. Corduroy, salute you, Dad. I bet even the cops couldn't really get sore about that. Too young to go. That's all right. Calm down. I mean, it's only Monday, and there'll be a Tuesday, and there'll be a Wednesday, and there'll be a Thursday, and there'll be all the others in between tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, rolling on like the slow, endless, dreary procession that it is. Yes. Yes. Life is but a figure fretting its way across the stage, a tale told by an idiot. Told by an idiot! Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Which reminds me, Long John follows in 30 or 40 seconds. Hi, old John. Hi, George. This is old friendly Fred. We'll be back tomorrow night.